From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past Friday when Lake Ontario's water levels reached a record high. The high levels and flooding have caused major damages to homes and businesses along the shoreline. And as reported by our WXXI News colleague Veronica Volk, residents are devastated, frustrated, and fed up. Laura Jackett lives along the water in North Greece. She told Veronica, quote, "If you go up right now to Edgemere Drive and Long Pond, Loudon, you'll cry if you care about it at all, because the road is shut down and the water is coming through people's houses, and it's up to my house now on North Drive," end quote. Jackett and other residents are preparing for possible additional flooding tomorrow when heavy rains are expected to hit the Rochester area. Could get an inch or more tomorrow alone. Some parts of the region are going to see that precipitation, which would push the record water levels even higher. So as residents watch the lake climb higher, they are faced with difficult decisions. How to prepare for what could be next, whether or not to continue to rebuild and replant, or if selling their properties is the only way to escape the cycle of preparation and repairs. This hour, we discuss the future of development and home and property ownership along the lake and how to build a safer and healthier lakefront. These are not easy questions, and we're going to try to do our best to be sensitive and answer them with facts and with thoughtfulness this hour. And I want to thank our guests for being here. Jim Howe is the director of the Nature Conservancy in Central and Western New York. Jim, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Pleasure to be here.
Doug Dobson is here, a property owner on Edgemere Drive, and Doug has held a number of government positions over the years, Greasetown Board, Monroe County Legislature among them. Is that correct, sir?
That's correct, Jim.
Thanks for being here.
And Jim, I'm currently the president of the Crescent Beach Neighborhood Association.
All right. Crescent Beach Neighborhood Association among Doug's titles. Thank you, Doug. And with us on the line is Frank Bivacqua, who is Public Information Officer for the IJC, the International Joint Commission. Frank, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Evan.
I want to just start with Doug to kind of give us a snapshot of what you're dealing with property. Kind of paint a little picture for us. Tell us where things are now and what you're thinking may happen tomorrow when we get more rain.
The water level is way too high right now as we speak. Everybody up and down the shoreline that I've talked to is worried about tomorrow with the weather forecast that we're getting. Just May 28th, we had another devastating flood from, it wasn't even strong winds. I mean, we had 6-foot, 9-foot waves in front of my house, probably for as long as 10, 12 hours. In 2017, I personally didn't have any damage to my break wall. 2019, those waves that came in on Tuesday, May 28th, they were so powerful, they lifted up a 50-foot long section of concrete, 4-foot wide, 10 inches thick, just lifted it up, dropped it, smashed it. My break wall is now in ruins. It's not usable. I can't even put my gas grill out on the break wall and cook out for Father's Day. I had to set a canopy up in my driveway next to the street and cook out because the lake level is too high.
How long can you live there?
How long? I'm going to fight it. In fact, I'll mention right now, I'm on the board of directors of the Lake Ontario Landowners Association. We're going to file a lawsuit. We had a rally up in Sandy Creek, last week. Over 300 people attended. We're going to hold more rallies. We're going to enlist homeowners, businesses that want to join in this lawsuit. I brought with me a copy, a real copy of the lawsuit from the Gut Dam in 1946. In fact, the gentleman who filed that lawsuit lived in the house that I now live in. And my next door neighbor is the son of Harry Bolton. He has all of the paperwork and files from the lawsuit on the Gut Dam. It was built in 1902, and this law, it caused flooding on the lake in 1946 to 1948. The neighbors filed a lawsuit against the Canadian government for $12 million. They went through the Supreme Court. It got reduced to $1 million. In 1952-53, the Canadian government had to remove the Gut Dam as an admission of it causing the high lake levels and the flooding. And then subsequent to that, the Canadian government paid $350,000 to that riparian organization that filed the lawsuit. So there's a precedent. There is a precedent over a dam holding water back and causing flooding.
And I want to make sure, before I turn to our other guests, I do understand your position with the lawsuit here, Doug, because when we read the comments that have come in on our reporting over now, frankly, several years on this issue, some of the and I am not an expert on water levels, water management. I mean, I can't dream of how difficult this is. But some of the comments indicate a belief that there is a way to create a kind of balance where nobody, whether it's here, whether it's Montreal, no one's got to experience the kind of flooding we're seeing, and it's just poorly managed. And then we see the kind of comments we literally have had people say, I don't care what you do with Montreal. Wipe it out. I'm tired of seeing my property. And that's hard to read, too. Where are you with this? Do you believe there is a solution that doesn't see anyone really hurt with this?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. There can be a solution reached that can manage the lake level properly, prevent the flooding in Montreal, and be good to the environment. The town of Greece in the 1970s acquired over 2,000 acres of land from New York State called the Braddock's Bay Management Wildlife Area. The town has been an excellent steward of the environment. And I live near those wetlands. I've lived on Edgemere Drive over 45 years. I've seen periods of high water. I've seen periods of low water. The lake, I mean, that's the purpose of a dam. Is to hold back water. Beavers made dams since creation to hold back water, control water. It can be managed. There can be a happy reach on what the lake level should be.
So let me turn to Jim Howe, because Jim reached out, and I will tell our listeners that when we have questions about a number of environmental issues, there are very few people who I think not only bring expertise, but an ability to communicate like Jim. And so when Jim reached out to us and said, you know, it's probably time to have an important conversation about this, we were listening. What made you want to reach out now, Jim? Tell me where you are on this.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. Well, first of all, I just want to say I don't own property on the lake, so I can't imagine what Doug is going through and other landowners. And I, you know, my heart's out. My heart really goes out to everyone who's dealing with flooding and erosion this spring. Who dealt with it in 2017 as well, I know. So I guess, Evan, just to think about this, though, from what's happening around North America right now, we've got three Great Lakes, Superior, Erie, and Ontario, at record levels. We've got the Ottawa River, which enters the St. Lawrence River right above Montreal at a record level, all-time record level. We've got the Mississippi and the Missouri basins flooding. We've got people skiing in the Sierra Nevada through August. I mean, this is a crazy year with precipitation. I think climate change is exacerbating things. There's no question in my mind. But did Plan 2014 cause Lake Superior to go high? No. Did Plan 2014 cause Lake Erie to go high? No. Did Plan 2014 cause the Ottawa River to go high? No. I guess our position is that there is no water level management plan for Lake Ontario that can prevent flooding. This happened in the 1970s under the old plan three times. It happened in the 1980s once. It happened in the 1990s twice, all under the previous plan, which people are saying we should go back to. So I think human memory is often short, and we forget that this flooding is a regular occurrence. It's a high cycle of water that is a regular pattern on all the Great Lakes, and this is what we're experiencing right now.
A regular pattern and we'll have plenty of time for Doug and others to respond. I want to bring in Frank Bivacqua in just a second from IJC, which has taken all kinds of heat in recent weeks and months. But with the pattern of climate change, as you point out, we are seeing record levels not just on Lake Ontario, but in a lot of different places here and frankly around the world. One of the things that lay people like me struggle with when we look at climate change is we know it's happening. We don't know if individual events are always caused by it. But one of the things that, for example, a Columbia professor who wrote a book on trying to understand where weather and climate intersect is the question of moisture in the atmosphere. So not every time we see a weather event, it is, well, that's climate. But really the issue is how much moisture is there in the atmosphere. And is a 1-inch rain event going to become a 2-inch rain event, or a 1/2 inch would become 1 inch? When it snows 18 inches in Buffalo, well, a couple of years ago it was 3 feet. Are we seeing more precipitation in individual events because of climate change?
Definitely. So we're seeing more and more of our precipitation is coming in these heavy, intense downbursts. But I think that's a separate issue from the long-term trends that are driving Great Lakes water levels. I mean, there are high cycles in the Great Lakes. They go back. We've been keeping records since the time of the Civil War. You can see this regular undulation. You can see highs followed 10 or 15 years later by low water. We've seen that in Lake Ontario, too, under all plans, before the dam was put in place, under the previous plan, and now under Plan 2014. So I don't think there's any operating plan for a dam that can stop this or prevent this.
I guess I'm asking if you think climate change is making it harder or more challenging and more prevalent in terms of flooding.
I think climate change is probably exacerbating the highs that we're seeing. And my understanding, too, is that it may exacerbate the lows, too. So 10 years from now, we may be sitting at this table saying, the waters are too low. How can we hold back more water?
Okay. Let me turn to Frank Bivacqua. And the IJC has taken a lot of heat from especially government leaders, Senator Chuck Schumer, Governor Andrew Cuomo, many others. Frank, you've heard a couple of perspectives already. Plan 2014, tell me about how you evaluate it, what's working, and tell me a little bit more about where you think things stand now.
Sure, Evan. And, you know, our commissioners and staff are fully recognize how much people have suffered and how frustrated they are, especially with two floods in the last 3 years. It's absolutely horrible. And we were out on Edgemere Drive after Memorial Day. And, you know, I've been with this issue for more than 40 years, so certainly understand the coastal impacts and the losses that people have to cope with. There is a widespread belief that Plan 2014 caused the floods, but that's simply not the case. And you know, if you step back and just try to think about it logically, when the plan went into effect in January of 2017, Lake Ontario was at its long-term level. 4 months later, which isn't a very long time, you had flooding on the lake and really extensive flooding downstream on the St. Lawrence River. So, you know, the new plan could possibly have held more water back and raised the level on Lake Ontario. It could have released more water and raised the level downstream on the St. Lawrence River, but it couldn't have done both at the same time. So obviously something else happened, and that something else was record rainfall. In April, it was the second wettest April on record in 2017. And then that was followed by May, which was the wettest May on record in history that occurred that year. And that was coupled with high inflows from Lake Erie. So, you know, the issue was really too much water, more water than any plan could handle. The issue wasn't Plan 2014. And in fact, when you have these really high supply conditions, Plan 2014 isn't, you know, trying to help the wetlands. It's behaving just the way the old plan does, and that's balancing flooding upstream and downstream and reducing it in both locations to the extent possible.
All right, so let me just ask Doug Dobson. When Frank says you're going to, and with all of the rainfall and all of the water that we have to deal with, you were going to see flooding downstream or on Lake Ontario here on the shoreline, or both to some extent, but you can't prevent both. You don't seem to buy that. Why?
No. No, I disagree with that. I've lived on Edgemere Drive since 1976, 43 years. In 1972, Kodak gave us a time off from work to help with the sandbagging during the floods of 72. That was in June of 72 during Hurricane Agnes. It wasn't spring flooding, and it only lasted several weeks. It didn't last months like 2017 did. I remember the flooding that Jim referred to back in the 1980s. Our streets weren't closed. We didn't have broken brake walls. I remember the floods in 93. We got prepared for it. We were issued special stickers for our cars to get down to our homes, but our streets didn't flood in 93. It's maybe we've had some rain. Yep, I'll agree that 2017, that spring was the second or third wettest in history. What about the first or second wettest? We didn't have flooding during those years.
Well, you could have had lower lake levels to begin with in those years. I don't know how it matched up. But when it comes to this much water, where, I mean, again, I'm just listening to what the experts tell me. I don't know where the water's supposed to go, okay, either downstream or here, right?
Evan, I can tell you that it's in September, October, and November, we used to be able to walk down the sandy beach from our house to the Crescent Beach restaurant after dinner and have a glass of wine and walk home on the beaches. September, October, November, they were letting the water out before Plan 2014. Since 2017, the water's been right up, high on our break walls.
So where does it, but I'm still trying to figure out, where does it go? What Frank Bivacqua is telling me from the IJC is, if you want to get the water away from you here on your property, it's going to go to Montreal. I don't see where else.
It's got to go out the St. Lawrence River. The key is letting it out sooner. You have to start letting the water out of Lake Ontario sooner in the fall. Frank will probably even tell you, part of the reason they don't let the water out is for shipping. Back in the old days, shipping used to be done around Thanksgiving, and they would close the seaway. Now the seaway stays open until December 31st, so they got to keep more water in the lake higher and longer. And then when you get the spring runoffs from rain or snow, now you got flooding in the spring in April and May again.
Frank Bivacqua, would that have been a solution?
Well, again, over the last 2.5 years, the plan has been removing water from Lake Ontario as much as possible that conditions in the St. Lawrence River will allow. It's mainly been a situation of, flooding conditions downstream. Shipping is a factor. It has been it was in the fall of 2017. But the board pushed the levels as high as they could go and really pushed the industry. They were putting extra tugboats in, slower velocities. They took a number of costly measures to try and accommodate the higher flows. We went above what was considered the level for safe shipping. And, at that point in time, August of 2017, the board faced some very tough decisions on whether to increase the flows beyond what the seaway could accommodate and live with. It amounted to bringing the lake down just a couple days quicker than it would have come down anyway. It's a very hard decision, but it wasn't possible to provide enough relief to justify closing down a significant industry in the region.
Before I get to some of your phone calls and feedback, I just want to ask Jim Howe, again, the director of the Nature Conservancy in Central and Western New York, as we survey the lessons here that you think we have going forward, I think the flippant thing that we do sometimes is we just tell people, like Doug, we'll just move. I think that's a flippant response that's for people who, don't have property and don't have maybe multi-generations of property, don't have decades of time. So I would caution against that. But I do think it's okay to talk about, if we think realistically this is sustainable, to have the kind of lakefront property and living. I mean, eventually do we need to see some kind of migration away from it? I mean, what's the hard answer as you are starting to see it?
Yeah, I'm heartened that we are starting to talk about long-term resiliency for our shoreline. The governor has ready commissioned Resiliency Economic Development Initiative for Lake Ontario. The governor was in Rochester last week to roll that out. I think there's some really good ideas in there. Planning reach by reach, not homeowner by homeowner, working with communities to find solutions. At the Nature Conservancy, we believe there are ways we can incorporate living shorelines into designs. We do think the permitting programs, financial assistance, better information for shoreline property owners and communities about what works, what types of shoreline protection work best and last, are also really needed. And I think to your point, Evan, no one here is, the Nature Conservancy is not suggesting that people should move away from Lake Ontario. We are suggesting that in really vulnerable areas, we should take a harder look at, does it make sense to move people and infrastructure out of harm's way if people are willing to, I mean, on a voluntary basis? No one is trying to force that issue. But those types of programs have worked downstate. And I think we do need to start taking a long-term view about how we should be managing our shoreline, and a balanced view, too.
Sure. And I think a question that, as you said, you're not a waterfront property owner, so this question may be unfair. But if you're advising someone, or even thinking about what you might do in this situation, again, it's so emotional, it's so tied to different factors that if we're not in that position, I think it's easier for us to say what we would do. But would you find yourself having a hard time right now buying or continuing to live anywhere on waterfront property, whether it's Lake Ontario or a lot of parts of this country?
Yeah, great question. And I don't know if I can answer that because I don't live on the waterfront, but I'm sure, Doug, you obviously have very strong attachments to the home that you grew up, that you live in. You've been there 43 years, did you say?
On Edgemere Drive, 43. This is the third house.
Yeah. Okay. Third waterfront house. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a real benefit to living on the water, right? I mean, you get to see the sunsets, sunrises, you hear the waves. I mean, that's why you're an environmentalist, I'm sure you are.
And it's the wildlife. And it's the wildlife. It's the ducks, it's the geese, it's the swans, just the ponds, having the ponds behind us, raising my two kids, going kayaking and canoeing. I mean, and what I see now is the water is so high, it's ripping cattails right up out of their roots. We had an island of cattails in Buck Pond that got uprooted and pushed all the way down to the outlet of Buck Pond, and it's blocking the outlet. This morning I rode by on my bicycle, and pieces of that cattails are breaking away. This morning I counted eight turtles that did not survive getting across the road. Why? Prior to this high water, the turtles used to be able to go over to the shore and lay their eggs and, you know, reproduce. Now they couldn't bound through and put rocks in, so the turtles have to climb over the rocks, cross the road to find land to dig up to lay eggs. It's bad. This high water is bad for the environment that I see along the lakes.
So Jim, I mean, part of this decision, to people who have a choice still, it's going to be difficult. We've heard from some people who have already told us, you know, I'll probably look for other options. We've heard from others who say, I will be there until water buries my property. And you're nodding over there. Is that you, Doug? I mean,
I can tell you for a fact, down our street, we've got eight new neighbors that have moved in on our street since 2017. On May 28th, the day after the flooding, I went down to one of the new houses, the new guys. He moved in on Thursday, literally moved into the house on Thursday. Tuesday, he was flooded. He was on a flooded street. He's one of the ones, and that's another comment I wanted to make, in terms of, like Jim said, things that worked went well and things that didn't work. I have like nine neighbors that had all new break walls put in and paid for by the state. Some of them were $30,000 break walls. The one right next door to me is a $48,000 break wall. Some of those break walls held the water back. Seven of them did. There's three of them that didn't hold the water back. I made a comment to the New York State Regional Director that, you know, somebody ought to come down and look at the things that worked and the ones that didn't work, and don't repeat spending money on ones that don't work. And that person thought it was a good idea, called Albany. The Albany guy called the Avon person. The Avon person called me. That afternoon, we had two DEC field engineers down, and I took them for a walk up and down the shoreline, showed them the break walls that worked and the ones that didn't work. There were seven of them that held water back. Not a drop of water came from the lake into the street in front of those seven houses. The other three houses, one of the break walls, the waves were so powerful, the brand new steel that was put on that $48,000 break wall got ripped off. 20-foot sections of steel got ripped off.
It sounds to me, Doug, as we look around the world, whether it's Miami, whether it's parts of the American West, whether it's parts of Southeast Asia, there's so many places where we're already seeing rising water. It sounds like you don't think, if climate change is bringing water up in other places, that this is, it sounds like you think this is still manageable, that we don't have to capitulate and say this is part of our future.
I believe it can be better managed, yes. But I agree with what Jim said. We've seen cycles. You know, there's years where the water's higher. There's years when the water's lower. There hasn't been years where the water's been at 249 feet elevation. The lake wasn't created to hold water at 249. The lake was created to hold water somewhere between 242 and 246. 247 starts to get into the risky area. You know, I'm not sold on climate change yet. You know, I've read reports where 14,000 years ago, we had higher fluctuations in the lake than we do now. And that was before the fossil fuel. That was before man. We had fluctuations in lake level.
Wait, you're not sold that this is caused by climate change? Or you're not sold that climate change is man-made?
I'm not sold that lake level fluctuation is caused by climate change.
Okay, fair enough. So, Frank Bivacqua, before I take some phone calls, I'm just going to ask you a direct question then. Knowing that this is a hard question for people to hear, but I will ask you directly as a public information officer for the IJC, the International Joint Commission, are we at the point where you think property owners should plan to move?
Yeah, that is a hard question. So, you know, Evan, on Monday, the government of Quebec announced, you know, they had certainly very extensive flooding down there this year, that if any of the homes were damaged to more than 50% of the value, they weren't going to allow people to rebuild. So, you know, that's what Quebec feels is right for Quebec. I think New York has to find what's right for New York. And you know, we are encouraged by Governor Cuomo's Ready Commission and really wish them well. They're very hard questions that have to be wrestled with.
I think that's a bit of a dodge. I mean, are you telling property owners that you think that they really ought to consider other options?
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, it really depends on each individual circumstance. I think it's something everyone needs to think about, but, you know, that's it's not necessarily the answer.
Okay. Let's take our only break of the hour, and if you're on the phone, we're coming to you next. I know we're going to be hearing from Frank Scaramimano, who's a member of the International Lake Ontario St. Lawrence River Board. We've got calls and emails as well as we talk about the future of property ownership, the future of Lake Ontario dealing with flooding, and whether we can see a better way forward or not, and what that means for people, especially who live or have property there. Let's take that break and come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we take a look at the wellness industry, an industry that makes tens of billions of dollars a year in the United States. And experts say not all of it, but a lot of it, is based on anti-scientific bunk. It's exploitative. It's a scam. Well, we're going to talk about where wellness gets it right and where it can get exploitative next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me bring in Frank Scaramimano Jr., who's on the phone with us, a member of the International Lake Ontario and St. Lawrence River Board. Frank, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Very good, but I must correct you. I was fired from that board approximately a year ago.
I'm sorry.
So I am no longer on that board.
Why were you fired?
For some of the things that I'm going to say today.
Well, let's tee it up. Let's go right ahead. You were fired from that board for dissent from certain positions.
Yes.
Ask you, so go ahead, Frank. Yeah.
So, and I've been listening, and I agree with much that's been said, and I agree that there's a balance between the flooding upstream and downstream. What Plan 2014 did was change that balance by protecting Quebec at the expense of the lake. It basically prioritizes reducing or limiting flooding downstream while allowing the lake to continue to rise. Remember, Plan 2014 is designed to allow for extremes, not to prevent extremes. And so there's very little safeguard, there's very little cushion built into the plan that would moderate the lake level. It's all about allowing it to go and then at the last minute attempting to control it when it's frankly too late. So what I've been telling people is Plan 2014 is here. They did a good job of making sure that it can't be changed or it's going to be very difficult to change. And so that people need to armor themselves, and I mean both for low water and high water. We've been talking about homeowners, but there are a lot of businesses that are suffering due to the high water right now. And when the low water hits, it's going to be just as bad or worse for them. Again, Plan 2014, I believe, changed the balance. The analysis by the IJC showed that the only damages due to Plan 2014, increase in damages, were to the lake and to the upper St. Lawrence, the Thousand Islands. And the IJC was willing to adopt that. New York State went along with it. I think it's because the homeowners and the people along Western New York are the weakest political players in this.
Do you think a different plan would have seen potentially no flooding at all here, Frank? Could there have been a better management where there would have been no flooding?
Not no flooding, but I think there could be a better balance between the downstream flooding and the upstream flooding. And let me give you an example. Right now in the plan, there's a limit on how high you can take the water downstream, but no limit on Lake Ontario. And right now, under the current situation, there's room downstream for more water, but it would disrupt shipping. So, again, you can see where the priorities are not for getting the lake down. It's for other things, and those things are now instilled in the plan, made automatic in the plan. And the board has very little discretion to deviate from that, even if they could reach consensus to do so.
I'm going to let our guest respond in just a second. Let me follow up with Frank Scaramano here on one other point here. How much of the challenge of 2017, but especially this year in 2019, Frank, comes from the kind of rainfall that we probably are going to see more of tomorrow? How do you sort of tilt or at least kind of weight what is at fault here?
Well, definitely the rainfall and the amount of water that came in is the cause of flooding. The degree that there is flooding downstream and upstream, who pays the price, is my issue. And how is that balanced? In the negotiations that led to Plan 2014, Quebec insisted that there be no damage beyond what they used to get under the old plan. And the negotiators, including the state of New York, Governor Cuomo's administration, said, fine, we'll take all the damage on the lake in order to get this plan in place.
And so as we go forward here, a couple other quick ones here for you. I mean, would you tell property owners, especially here on Lake Ontario, you got to get out of there?
I would tell them to arm themselves. There are certainly some areas where I would never build a house and I wouldn't want a house, places along the sand spit, so to speak. But in general, I think you can put in some shore protection that would protect you. It's got to be unified. It's got to be community-wide. And more importantly, the DEC and the Army Corps of Engineers have to allow it to happen. They tie people's hands when it comes to the level of protection that they allow people to do.
And Frank, finally, we've got emails from some listeners saying these are the kinds of conversations being had around the world in waterfront communities dealing with, for different reasons, rising water levels, but often related to climate. How much do you think that is this an unique issue to Lake Ontario versus the kinds of discussions that are happening around the world?
I think it's not unique. It's to any kind of reservoir river system. I see it at other places where people that live on a lake that's been created by a dam, for instance, want certain levels, yet they want releases for downstream. So it's universal. And again, I think the difference here is that the balance was changed in a political process. And so now the lake is suffering more than it used to. And will continue to do so under Plan 2014 unless it's modified.
All right. So can you hang there for a second, Frank, if you don't mind?
I sure can.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Let me get Jim Howe first, who wanted to jump in. Then we'll get Frank Bivacqua, I think, just to be fair here. Go ahead, Jim Howe.
Thank you. Frank, hi. Good to hear your voice again. The one thing I would say about your analysis of the balance has shifted, this year, I think we've all seen this, 10,000 people had to evacuate their homes in Montreal, 10,000 people. So if this plan somehow has been designed by Quebec to help Montreal, it certainly is not working that way, because I don't think, I'm looking at Doug, I think maybe a handful of people have had to leave their homes along Lake Ontario, but when 10,000 people have to leave Montreal, clearly the system was not designed to help Montreal. Everyone is dealing with flooding this year equally. No one is winning here. Not Montreal, not shipping. It's not. This plan was designed to bring balance, and it's not about extremes. It's really about bringing a balance back to the system. And you can't. It's really hard to find that balance when there's this much extreme water in the system.
Let me just kick back to Frank Scaramano, and then I'll get Frank Bivacqua. But Frank Scaramano, to Jim Howe's point, I mean, I've talked to reporters, whether it's our colleague Veronica Volk, Adam Chodak from WROC-TV, who traveled up to Montreal, and said, you know, boy, I mean, not at all to downplay what's happening here, but it's hard to believe some of the things that you see there. But what you're sort of implying is that the worst of it is right here. What would you say to Jim Howe there, Frank?
Well, what I'd say is, if you just look at the plan and how the flows are, the outflows down the St. Lawrence are limited to, in order to maintain a certain level at Montreal. It's above the flood level. I agree they're being flooded. But then it's maintained. Remember, a lot of the problem comes from the Ottawa River. This is a Canadian flooding problem. And yet the St. Lawrence flow is cut way back. The lake is allowed to rise without limit while Montreal is held at a level. It is a flood level, I agree. People have to evacuate. They live on a river. But the lake is allowed to rise without limit while it's limited downstream. I'm not saying that there wouldn't be flooding. I'm not saying that it's easy to manage. What I'm saying is the balance was changed with Plan 2014.
Okay, well, Frank Bivacqua, I'm going to let you respond to that, and then I've got a question to follow up. But why don't you respond to what you heard from Frank Scaramano? Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Evan. So, you know, there is a balance. And, you know, if you look at what happens this year and in 2017, the flows are reduced out of Lake Ontario when the Ottawa River is peaking, and that provides some relief by reducing the flood peak downstream. But then the flows are sustained at a much higher than a natural rate for weeks after that and held at flood level or near flood level downstream in order to get more water off of Lake Ontario, and that reduces the flood peak on the lake. And, you know, so it's not like someone's losing at the expense to someone else. Everyone comes out better than if it were under natural conditions. And, yeah, you can argue if the balance should be tweaked a little bit this way or that way, but that's really, and of course there were 16 years of debate that led to the new regulation plan, and not everyone's happy with it.
But on the subject of that plan, Frank says, you know, it's sort of designed to be very hard to change. And so I've heard from, a number of us at WXXI have heard from local leaders who said they heard that the U.S. chair of the IJC, Jane Corwin, wanted to have this recent emergency meeting to propose suspending Plan 2014. Is that what has happened? Is there a plan to suspend 2014, Frank Bivacqua?
Commissioners have met and they've consulted with their board, and they're looking at every possibility to provide more relief. Right now, the plan is, or the flows are being set under something called Criterion H14 of the IJC's order, which gives the board authority to deviate from the plan flow and directs them to provide all possible relief to shoreline communities upstream and downstream. So, there's no right now we're really focused on reducing flooding impacts, and suspending the plan at this point in time wouldn't do anything more to help people. So that's not where we're focused at this moment.
Let me take a variety of calls from listeners with different backgrounds, and then we'll let all of our guests respond, because we've had a number of phone calls and emails, and I kind of want to work in. So, listeners, if I come to you, try to keep it moving. We'll take kind of a quick slate of comments. I'll start with Richard down in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, I've got just a quick story I want to tell. When I was still in diaper, well, our family had from the late 19th century, had property on Edgemere Drive. And when I was still in diapers, one of my earliest visual memories is being sitting out on the sand in front of the break wall, way out. It seemed like I was way out on this long beach playing in the sand. Now, from one season to the next, probably around 1940, that sand beach disappeared, never came back. And the understanding I had was that the lake was manipulated, the level was manipulated in order to let the Liberty ships that were being built at the old Odenbach plant get out into the St. Lawrence River. Now, if that, but there was a break wall there also, which had been built in the 19th century or the very early 1900s. And if that was the case, then people back then, long before the St. Lawrence Seaway, had the experience of the lake breathing, kind of inhaling and exhaling, flooding over the sandbar that separated Long Pond from the lake, and then receding again, all right? And that the break wall was built there in order for cottages to keep the separation between Long Pond or the ponds, all of them, for that matter, and the lake, so the cottages could be built there. So I cannot, since that beach has disappeared and never come back since 1940 or 1939, I can't be convinced that human manipulation isn't the cause of all of this high water, on a just unending high water down there. And that when there is heavy rain and so on, the situation is just exacerbated.
Well, thank you, Richard. I mean, there's a lot of people sharing perspective, kind of going back a long way, as Richard does, to sharing this. Also on Edgemere Drive, Wayne in Rochester wants to jump in. Go ahead, Wayne.
Hi, Evan. Yeah, Wayne Knox. We bought actually two houses right next to each other 5 years ago, and then just 2 years ago, right during the middle of the 2017 flooding. I have a question for IJC, where Plan 2014, their goal is to give us higher highs and lower lows. Since the plan started, all we've seen is the highest highs in all recorded history. And my question for the IJC is, where are the lower lows? When are they planning on giving us the lower lows?
All right, Wayne, thank you. I'll let Frank Bivacqua from IJC jump in on that. Go ahead, Frank.
So the highs and lows are mainly determined by how wet and dry conditions are. We have some influence over that, but we don't decide when it's going to happen. I would say that the conditions we've seen since Plan 2014 went into effect, we've seen, you know, high inflows from Lake Erie and some very persistent wet weather and at times very extremely wet weather. And that the levels we've seen, as far as we can determine, would have been the same under the old plan or very close to the same.
Okay. Thank you, Wayne, for the phone call. And let me also get Paul in Webster, who's been waiting. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, a couple things. Spent most of my life on Lake Ontario, and I've seen highs and lows, nothing ever like this. The climate change thing is kind of, in my opinion, politicians inserting themselves into the matter so that people become enraged, because Lake Ontario is several hundred feet above the oceans, which happen to be rising. Precipitation may be a factor, but, you know, climate change is, I think, kind of a more of a political thing to throw into there to enrage people. And then the second thing is, if you listen to what Frank was saying regarding the current plan, is they wait too long in some cases, because when the Army Corps of Engineer was managing the lake, my understanding is that, you know, water may have been let out sooner and it wouldn't have reached this level, you know, these kinds of levels. Then the last thing I wanted to say, because you said to be quick, Evan, is I went on to the Army Corps of Engineers, and a lot of people are talking about, you know, things that they're experiencing with their own eyes. But I went on to the Army Corps of Engineers website, which everybody can go on to, and I looked at the difference in the lake levels, all of the Great Lakes, between this year and last year. And I emailed you a spreadsheet that I sent over, but I'll try to be quick. I'm just going to use Lake Superior as an example, but I did all the Great Lakes and then Lake Ontario. Superior is 12 inches above average, so it is getting the additional lake level rise due to precipitation, but Ontario is 27 inches above average. And what I did is I took all the average increases of all the lakes, and it's about 14.4 inches, all the Great Lakes above average this year. So yes, there's something happening with precipitation, but when I looked at the averages of all the lakes, Lake Ontario is actually 87% above the averages, above average of all the other lakes. So, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. When you put Lake Ontario in, which is currently, like, from a statistical standpoint, an outlier because of what's happening with the IJC, what's happening is, you know, you're seeing all the lakes actually below the average because Lake Ontario is bringing the average up. So there's clearly something happening, and everybody talks about the millions of factors that go into the lake levels. But the only factor that's obvious that's changed in the past 3 years is this current plan. But the numbers speak for themselves. There's definitely something really crazy going on, and it's Lake Ontario being 87% above the average water level rise of the other lakes.
All right, so Paul. Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, so first of all, waiting too long to let the water out, I think that's referring to the high water level triggers in the new plan, and we did a very close look at that for 2017 and determined that if we had had lower trigger water levels, would not have made a difference. The next point was letting more water out in the fall, and our board is of the view that the rules of Plan 2014, the flows in the fall of 2018, when Lake Ontario was at its near average level, were almost certainly higher than they would have been if the board had been operating under the previous plan. And finally, the amount above average for Lake Ontario. Lake Ontario is the most downstream of the five Great Lakes. It fluctuates more than the other lakes. That's just natural.
Go ahead, Doug, and I'm going to ask Jim jump in there too. Go ahead, Doug.
Evan, we have a couple of individuals who live on our street that are mathematical engineers and statisticians, and they've ran math modeling using the IJC's data, weekly data on the lake level. They've calculated that if you just take into account the water that's coming in from Lake Erie and the precipitation, the lake would have only gone up 9.5 inches. Where's the rest of it coming from? It's got to be because they're holding it back. You know, ask Frank about in late 2018, did one of the big ships get stuck in the St. Lawrence River in, I don't know, November, December? And wasn't the plan then to hold water back with the dam so that they could lift the boat out of the mud and push it with the tugs? So in late 2018, they were holding water back again because they had to get the ship that were up there stuck, unstuck.
Jim Howe from the Nature Conservancy, you know, Paul from Webster called to say he thinks the talk of climate change is politicians kind of scaring people. Now, you are not a politician. You invoked it not as the sole cause here, but as a factor. What would you say to that?
I think the evidence is clear that climate change is here. It's real. We are causing it, and we have a narrow window of opportunity to make a difference if we're serious about it. I also would say what I find more troubling is that we have some of our politicians promising people that if we change the plan, that the flooding's going to go away. And I think that is the real distraction, because that distracts us from the idea that we really need to focus on a more sustainable shoreline and a more resilient shoreline.
Briefly, Doug, go ahead.
The trigger points are too high. It's like the oil light in your car. When the oil light comes on, it's too late. When the water level hits the trigger points, the flooding, it's too late. And you just got to go back to a better plan and doing the things that the governments want to do in terms of strengthening the shorelines.
30 seconds. Frank Scaramamano, what do you want IJC to do next? Go ahead, Frank Scaramamano.
Well, again, I do believe that climate change is a factor. We're getting more extreme rainfall, so we should build in resiliency. But I think that applies not only to the shoreline, but to the plan. This plan is less resilient than the old plan. It has less human intervention. It doesn't allow for adaptive management by the operators, and it changed the balance. So I think resiliency is something that the plan should be changed to provide more resiliency so that it can respond to these climatic changes.
Thank you for taking the time, Frank Scaramamano, Jr. I appreciate the time this hour.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being with you.
Frank Bivacqua from the IJC. Does the IJC have plans to change any of their management?
The IJC does have an adaptive management program. We are evaluating the performance of Plan 2014 on an ongoing basis, and we are committed to doing a deep review of the plan. That's what our order says that we'll do. But to date, we just haven't found the magic bullet. There's really nothing in view that would make major improvements, and certainly nothing that would prevent flooding when we see the kind of water supplies that we've seen this year and in 2017.
Frank from the IJC, please stay in touch with us. I appreciate that. And Doug Dobson, in 15 seconds, you will stay in your property on Lake Ontario on Edgemere Drive until when?
Until the waters goes back down.
You're not leaving.
I'm not leaving.
I want to thank you for taking the time to be here. I know it's been a hard time for you and property owners. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Jim Howe, the director of the Nature Conservancy in Central and Western New York. Thank you for your expertise.
Great to be here.
More connections coming up next.